From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
I'm Patrick Donges, in for David Gustina. Coming up this week, even with state legislators back in their districts, Albany continues to produce scandals. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt will have the latest on the sexual harassment scandal that has landed Assembly Speaker Silver in some hot water. We'll also hear what the scandals mean for the bigger political picture this election year with our political observer, Dr. Alan Shartok. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A rare apology from one of New York's most powerful Democratic leaders regarding a payout to alleged victims of sexual harassment has raised more questions at the state capitol. Meanwhile, as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver says he welcomes an impending ethics probe.
Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver has apologized for the way he handled a secret $103,000 payment to settle a claim by two female Assembly staffers. They said they were sexually harassed by Brooklyn Assemblyman Vito Lopez. The payment came to light after Silver had disclosed that Lopez had been censured by the Assembly Ethics Committee for two more instances of alleged sexual harassment. But Silver, in a statement, said he was sorry that he had not sought an Ethics Committee review in the first instances of alleged sexual harassment by Lopez, and he said he regrets not making the circumstances surrounding the payment public when it was issued in June of this year. The apology came just 2 hours after Governor Andrew Cuomo called on the state's Ethics Commission to investigate. Susan Lerner, with Common Cause, says her group, along with the New York City chapter of the National Organization for Women, plans to submit a written complaint to the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, known as JACOP.
Asking them to investigate the instances of misconduct by Assemblymember Lopez, and why the misconduct that we know of that resulted in the June settlement was initially handled outside of the Assembly's established procedures.
Lerner says it appears the Assembly may have violated its own policies, which require that any allegations of sexual harassment against an Assembly member be sent to the Ethics Committee.
The legislature cannot police itself. We learned this over and over and over again, and even when they set up procedures to police themselves, they ignore them.
Lerner says the complaint will ask JACOP to find out whether there is a pattern of disregarding established protocol for sexual harassment cases and whether there have been other similar secret payoffs. Dick Dady with Citizens Union agrees that the disclosure of the secret payment, first reported in the New York Times, and Silver's subsequent apology raises even more questions.
It's a classic case of the more you know, the more questions arise as to what should have happened and what didn't happen that needed to happen.
Dady wants to know why the Assembly did not notify JACOP when it first heard of the allegations against Assemblyman Lopez at the time of the secret settlement, and he says it's possible that violations of the state's public officers law occurred.
We believe that harassing employees of the state legislature can constitute, you know, violating the public trust, which would trigger a Jacob investigation.
Dady says without more details, though, it's hard to know. His group is also formally asking Jacob to conduct a thorough investigation. He says Speaker Silver needs to provide more information about the settlement, too.
He can still protect the identity of the complainant while also fully revealing to the public how the assembly handled this case.
The attorney representing two of the alleged victims issued a harshly worded statement criticizing the speaker's apology. Nationally known lawyer Gloria Allred sharply disagrees with the speaker's assertion that the case was not referred to the Assembly Ethics Board because the victims did not want an investigation. Allred says nothing in the settlement precluded the probe. Mr. Silver has to shift his priorities, she said. Silver, in his second statement in less than 24 hours, said he welcomes the probe because he says it would supersede any confidentiality agreements and allow all of the facts to come out. The speaker says those facts will show that the secrecy was out of deference to the complainants. And the speaker says he's asked lawyers representing the women to waive confidentiality clauses so that more documents in the case can be made public. Finally, a spokesman for Silver says there are no other legal settlements besides the payout to the alleged victims of Assemblyman Lopez. Jacob has called a special meeting for Tuesday, September 4th. No agenda is listed, and the commission does not confirm or comment on investigations. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, our political observer, Dr. Alan Shartok. Alan, as we've heard all week and as we just heard, even when the legislators go out of town, scandal does not seem to escape them. What's your take on this latest set?
Well, first of all, you have a lot of legislators. And it's unfortunate that they all have to suffer when somebody does something really stupid. There's no question there are men, there are women, people are attracted to each other or not. But when you get an accusation like this, in which Mr. Lopez is accused of having regularly and systematically hired and then fired and gone through people in his office and asking them to wear certain kind of clothes and making constant sexual innuendo, that's really dumb on his part. But look, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And here is this guy who is the chairman of a powerful committee in the New York State Assembly, but is also the boss of Brooklyn. He's the Brooklyn boss. And he makes judges. And he is a guy who has tremendous power, including, obviously, who's going to vote for who for speaker. And it may well be that Shelley Silver's entire strategy in staying in the speakership is somewhat dependent on Lopez. I know that that is the truth. So Lopez gets himself into trouble. And when he does, they settle the case. Look, this gets done in corporations all the time. Make this go away. This gets done in universities all the time. But here it's the people's money, and over $100,000 is paid out to, quote, make somebody go away. I am sure, I know Shelley Silver fairly well, I am sure, and he's a very bright man, that he did it. He held his nose. He didn't want to do it. He did it. And then we see Lopez goes and does it a second time. Now, that is where the problem is. And Shelley, quite correctly, throws the book at him. But, you know, the newspapers and the others, they're not after Lopez. I mean, he makes an interesting story. But Shelley Silver has kept himself in office for a long time without being touched by real scandal. And this is the kind of thing that doesn't help him. So they come along and they make a decision that they're going to bring this to Jacob. Now, Jacob is interesting. This is the new ethics commission that Andrew Cuomo set up. Let me tell you right now, it stinks. It hasn't done anything to really give us a hope that we finally have an ethics commission that is going to do anything. So they come along and they say, we're going to investigate this. This is a perfect opportunity for them. Because when you haven't done anything and you get an easy one, it makes it easier to sort of say, see, we're on the job. And that is what I'm kind of concerned about. Jacob is now being called J-Joke for a good reason, and that is that it doesn't do anything. If it does something here, it'll be an easy one and they'll do it. There's one other thing I want to say here, and that is that Andrew Cuomo has not exactly gotten along with Shelley Silver. We know they're competitors for power. And what I'm suggesting here is that there's always some guiding hand in all of this. Here's Cuomo. He comes along and he says, refer it to the Jacob people. This is going to be an investigation that extends not only to the errant Lopez, but also to whether or not Shelley Silver did anything improper in paying out this money to shut up one of the former complainants.
Now, you beat me to the punch mentioning the governor. It seems that Shelley Silver may be one of the, if not the sole remaining pillars of the Democratic Party in New York State. And as we've seen, the governor has been shimmying to the right in an effort of bipartisan cooperation, or so he says, with the Republicans. How does this all factor into that politically?
Put another way, there are those who believe that Andrew Cuomo is a secret Republican. So that when you get something like the failure of New York State to just raise the minimum wage a little bit, and he's saying it's not the right time to do it, or fracking, where a lot of people think Andrew Cuomo is leaning towards hydrofracking in New York State. And Silver stands up to him and has stood up to him right along. This gives the governor a golden opportunity to actually bring Silver out of the picture. He's already got Dean Skelos, the leader of the Republicans, because they wouldn't be in the majority if Cuomo hadn't decided not to veto their scandalous reapportionment bill, which he promised as he was running for governor. So you make a very, very good point. This is an opportunity to deal with Sheldon Silver.
You also mentioned this being an opportunity for Jake Hope to kind of show the teeth that they've supposedly been given. How many more skeletons do you see coming out of the closet if this thing goes any farther?
Well, no. I mean, this was just an easy one. You have all of these women coming forward and saying he did these bad things. He tried to grope them. He tried to kiss them. He tried to do this and that. He denies it, by the way. If, in fact, it turns out that that's true, this is not exactly the pay-to-play kind of scandal of the century that Jake Hope ought to be looking into. This is just an easy one and gives them an opportunity to show off and to continue to do nothing.
The Republican National Convention happening in Tampa this week. Your thoughts on how the Republican Party's platform might affect elections here in New York State?
I don't think you're going to find an awful lot. If the election is close, and it looks like it's close, some of the upstate congressional districts will have close elections for Congress. If there is not a huge group of people who say Obama is our guy and we want to elect him and the rest of it, it may mean if the election is close that some of those crucial districts in the upstate region will go Republican rather than Democratic and keep the Republicans in the House of Representatives in power.
Our political observer, Dr. Alan Chartok. Alan, thank you.
Welcome.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm Patrick Donges, in this week for David Gustina. Governor Andrew Cuomo was in the Essex County town of Keene this week to announce that the state will step in and provide funding for a new fire station in the wake of pullbacks in funding from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. More from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
Officials in Essex County have been working to rebuild the Keene Fire Station since its destruction during Tropical Storm Irene. Keene Volunteer Fire Department Chief Jody Whitney says the past year has been a challenge with critical equipment, including pumper trucks, in different locations.
It's been a struggle. We've had our equipment spread out throughout the township in different buildings. That's probably been one of the hardest responses for my personnel, to know who's going where to get what equipment. That's been a very hard process.
Construction of a new fire station in Keene was scheduled to begin in August, but the Federal Emergency Management Agency reneged on $600,000 that would allow the hamlet to move forward with rebuilding plans, according to Town of Keene Supervisor Bill Farabee.
FEMA just hasn't been upfront with us, honestly. I mean, working with FEMA over this incident, you know, we would sit at a table in Albany and talk about it. They would tell us one thing, and the next day would be different. Basically, what happened is FEMA made a verbal obligation of about $680,000. That was after they deducted our insurance. Then, within the last 2 weeks, by email only, have they said they're re-looking at it, and they feel they're going to retract half of what they were obligated themselves to. It leaves us basically nothing to build with. Without this today, I mean, there's no way we could have done anything.
Governor Andrew Cuomo came to Keene to tell residents that the state will step in and provide the money. Cuomo presented a check for $640,000 to the community, saying the firehouse is a metaphor for rebuilding across the state.
The community came together and came very close to building the new firehouse and having the finances to do that. Little confusion, let down with our friends at FEMA. Federal money that people were relying on didn't actually happen, so now there's a little bit of a shortfall. Not that little bit of a shortfall, actually, kind of pretty big shortfall. And it is my pleasure, on behalf of the state of New York, to say that we're going to help you cover that little bit of a shortfall and provide $640,000 so we can actually build that firehouse that we need.
Governor Cuomo says local officials will continue their attempts to obtain the funding from FEMA.
They'll continue to pursue it, but time was getting short. We were right up against the limit where if we didn't start soon and identify the financing that we would lose the bids, we'd have to start all over again, and nobody wanted to do that. And if we didn't move now, we were going to lose the season. So something had to be done, and after months of going back and forth, we just wanted to step up and get the reconstruction underway. And we'll figure it out one way or the other with the federal government. And, you know, there is a silver lining, right? Because this firehouse will actually be much better than the old firehouse.
Officials hope to formally break ground within a couple weeks and open the new firehouse in the spring.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
1 year ago, Tropical Storm Irene moved into the Northeast, leaving flooding and destruction on a scale rarely seen in the region. Homes and farmland were washed away, bridges and roads were destroyed, and trees and power lines were leveled, leaving hundreds of thousands of people without service for days, even weeks. Just a few weeks later, Tropical Storm Lee moved through, compounding the damage and slowing recovery efforts. Ulster County, New York, was hit hard by the weather. The Legislative Gazette's Brian Shield spoke recently with Ulster County Executive Mike Hine, who had high praise for the first responders and state officials.
They were there very quickly. You owe the governor a real debt of gratitude because, as my emergency management director said, who's had 30 years on the job, this is the fastest emergency response and emergency declaration that we saw from any governor ever. And that really is a testament to Governor Cuomo. That said, post-Hurricane Irene, if there are lessons to be learned, simply said, the bureaucracy has been too big for homeowners. The awards have been too small when it comes to insurance claims. They've been forced to jump through hoops. Those are things that are completely unacceptable as someone tries to work to put their lives back together. These are areas where the county government has worked to try to provide assistance for people. But the reality is this has been far too much bureaucracy for many people. From the ability to be able to get bridges back in, there was a bridge that was torn from its foundation into Phoenicia, the hamlet of Phoenicia. The DPW workers got that up and running, back and ready to go a month ahead of schedule, under budget, so that the hamlet of Phoenicia could have something called the Festival of the Voice, which attracts 7,000 people into that hamlet and gives a real economic shot in the arm. So it's just this huge outpouring of community involvement as well, neighbors helping neighbors. I think that's really been something that has been a testament. I'll give you an example. A day after Hurricane Irene, I flew over the county to be able to identify where we were going to put resources in a situation in which there were many roads that were cut off. You simply couldn't get around. A good example was on County Route 47, where there was once this picturesque county, country road that had a small culvert that went underneath that had, because of Hurricane Irene, a 35-foot deep, 50-foot across canyon created. I took Senator Schumer there, and he was just absolutely astonished at the power and the level of damage that could occur as a result of simply incredibly fast-moving water. That bridge is up and running. My people had to build a brand new bridge in that structure, and they had a temporary in place in less than 48 hours because we had to be able to get children out of the Frost Valley YMCA camp. So there's a lot of these stories of people stepping forward and doing Herculean efforts across the board. But I wanted to tell you, I went and spoke at a fundraiser shortly after Hurricane Irene at Bel Air. And I expected there to be just a handful of people there because all the roads to get there had been cut off. The truth of the matter was there was almost 2,000 people there. Neighbors helping neighbors, pouring out whatever they could do to help, they were doing. And that was one of the most beautiful moments I had seen as county executive. And I think it really exemplifies the people of Ulster County and really the people of the entire Catskill region. They're committed to helping their neighbors. I had an individual who they introduced to me after I spoke, who had lost everything, his business, his home, cars, everything. And he said something that I will forever take with me, and it moved me to tears. As I knelt down next to him and shook his hand to ask him how he was doing, he said, "I'm doing fine. I'm here to help other people." And they had just told me that he had lost everything. And he said, "I have three beautiful daughters and a wife I have loved for 30 years. I haven't lost a thing. Everything else can get rebuilt." And so that's exactly what we look at here in Ulster County. We're open for business. We have rebuilt. In some instances, we are actually even better than we were before. You know, re-engineered bridges, restructured roadways, businesses that have been able to make significant improvements. I can't say thank you enough, really, to everybody collectively who have come together. And I just came from an event in Pine Hill in the town of Shandaken on Saturday, in which the town came together to say thank you. Now, this is a town that has taken the brunt. If there was a place where you could say was the epicenter in Ulster County, it was the town of Shandaken, and they were saying thank you to other people rather than, you know, again, and really appreciating the efforts that have been made.
God forbid this should ever happen again, a storm of this size and this intensity, but what lessons have you learned to get ready for this another one if it ever happened?
We worked extremely hard during Hurricane Irene to be able to get information out. That really is one of the best things that a government can do, is bring together people like Central Hudson, bring together all the emergency services personnel, and make sure information gets out and that means through print media, radio, television, everyone. And I was pleased, obviously, with the level of effort that went into making that happen. But as with any one of these events, you have to look to try to get better. And so we have formed an emergency command center at the law enforcement center so that in the future we'll be able to provide even more enhanced cooperation as we get information out and provide essential services to people in need in these incredibly difficult times.
That's Ulster County Executive Mike Hine speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Brian Shields. That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of this program are available by calling 1-800-323-9262. That number again is 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program 1235, or you can listen or podcast us on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Patrick Donjes. David Gustina will return next week.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.